And good morning, Kansas City, and welcome to Central Standard Friday. I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM, and it's movie day here on Central Standard Friday. We're going to be taking a look back at some of the films that have opened in the last month or so. And today I'm joined on the panel by...
John Tibbetts. I teach film at the University of Kansas.
Marie Asner, a day after her birthday and a year younger, a ham, with the Metro Voice News and onairprep.com and phantomtollbooth.org.
And a happy belated birthday to you, Marie.
Thank you.
We're not only going to be talking about the movies that have opened up over the last month or so, but we're also going to be chatting a little bit about the 85th Annual Academy Awards, which took place on Sunday night. Were there any surprises for you? Did your favorite win, or did you feel like something got slighted? And how about Seth MacFarlane as a host? Was he funny or offensive? We'd like to get your feedback. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. You can also send us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org or tweet us. Also, you know, there are all kinds of ways. You can send us a carrier pigeon. However you want to contact us, we're happy to talk to you. And that tweet is at KCURCST. We're going to start out by chatting a little bit about a movie that we've all three seen that opened back on February 22nd. It's an action adventure called Snitch.
And that is Dwayne Johnson.
Also known as?
The Rock.
I'll tell you what, I may be among the few, I don't know, but I thought he was pretty creditable in this. I've always kind of liked him because one suspects that there's some intelligence lurking behind the eyes and within the muscles. And he plays a fella here who's trying to get his son out of prison. Now, he went to prison for good reasons, but the sentence was harsh, and so Dwayne wants to get him out early. And to do so, he gets into an unholy embrace with Susan Sarandon. Susan Sarandon is going to help him legally get his son out of jail if the snitch, Dwayne Johnson, will infiltrate a bunch of people with a drug cartel, or at least that's where he ends up. Don't trust the feds. That's basically the underlying message here, because things never go as they have been promised to Dwayne. That sounds a little bit like when I went into the Army. Things were never as they were as they were promised. And so Dwayne finds himself in over his head, as to be expected. But what's interesting is that he gets beaten up, he gets fooled, he's bewildered at times. And in other words, except for his imposing physical presence, he's a bit of a lame duck hero. And I respect him and I respect the film for that, which may seem a little peculiar. But I thought it was refreshing for a change to see a hero that, in spite of that bulk, we can find ourselves identifying and perhaps even sympathizing with. So I liked it for that. Susan Sarandon is wasted here. Why she wandered in, I don't know. And he is a snitch. It's based on a true life story. I've never heard of it, but it's what the movie says. And I think the fate that awaits him at the end of the film, which I won't go into, is pretty sad, all things considered. But you'll have to see it to know what I mean. Anyway, out of, what, four or five stars?
Five stars.
These days, out of five, I'll give it a three.
Okay, Marie?
Well, Dwayne Johnson, otherwise known as The Rock, has been out of wrestling for a while. So when he comes back to wrestling, you figure there's something that he's promoting, and sure enough, it happens to be this movie. I agree with John. He's not a hero who thinks of everything right away, you know, like, oh, the light bulb goes on over the head and I've got this brilliant idea. He kind of goes with the flow on this. And there's really four stories that are going on here. There's the story about he trying to help his son, and he has two wives. He's got an ex-wife he gets along with and the other wife, and everyone there seems to get along. We've got The Rock's friend Daniel, who is an ex-con, who's trying to help him and also stay out of trouble himself. There's the kid who's in jail trying to stay alive. And then we've got the group of drug dealers led by Benjamin Bratt, and I think he was in television's Private Practice. So we got these four stories going along, and it kind of goes along all right. But the main thing is, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, said that he wanted to make movies that were family-friendly and get away from violence. But this is not a family-friendly film as such. He's the owner of a truck company, and as soon as you hear that, you know we're going to have trucks rolling over, trucks crashing, so on like that. So it does have this PG-13 rating. But I didn't think it was a bad film at all. And the moral is, if you have a friend who says, hold a package for me, say, no, do not run. Start running. I'm going to give it 2.5 stars.
You know, this film was directed by a former stuntman, so you might expect there to be nothing but action. However, this is a very thoughtful, low-key movie. As a matter of fact, I think some action fans may actually be a little disappointed at the deliberate pace that this film has. It's not your typical Rock movie. And as you pointed out, John, he really is flexing his acting muscles instead of his biceps this time around. And I thought he did a very good job as well. I would also like to point out that the supporting performances are very good. As you mentioned, though, Susan Sarandon is wasted and, you know, in a very cardboard role. But all of the other supporting performances are very impressive.
And yeah. There's a young black drug lord in the neighborhood that The Rock gets involved with, and I found him to be a very compelling presence. I wish Benjamin Bratt had been in it more, though. Mm-hmm. To talk about him. He appears relatively briefly, and I was surprised at that. He's a bigger name than that.
And Barry Pepper is quite good as one of the FBI agents.
Very convincing,
sure.
Actually.
Mm-hmm. Marie, did you have another comment?
Yeah, I think the name of that actor John was referring to is Michael Kenneth Williams. He's a new actor.
From The Wire.
Ah, there we go.
Ah,
that's why it looked familiar. Okie dokie.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Yeah, I thought the film was surprising in that respect, in that it did have so many strong performances and was more quite realistic, you know, compared to most of what you would expect from The Rock. And he does play it in a more convincing fashion, given the fact that he's this big hulking guy, and yet he still manages to get his own backside whipped
little
bit. So. So, yeah, I like this film as well, only it's not a great film by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a serviceable and interesting, realistic look at what sometimes goes on with the feds and the deals that they sometimes have to cut to try to get to the bad guys.
Yeah, and I think we can say that compared to some of the films out there, this is really one that we can recommend in general.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do we recommend it to families?
No.
No, it's violent, yes.
But I'll give it 3. So I think we're right about 3 for for Snitch. That's 3 out of 5 stars, and that is rated R. Let's talk about another one that all three of us have seen, Beautiful Creatures, rated PG-13. Marie?
Yes, for fans of the Twilight series who are moaning and groaning because there are no more movies to be made out of that, here comes a substitute. And the authors of the first book, Cami Garcia and Margaret Stoll, have done a story, a book called Beautiful Creatures, and I think the second book is either in the market now or probably will be have a film made out of it. It's a gothic romance, teenage romance, that's set in the Deep South. And in this one, the girl has the power, and her family is the one to watch out for, as opposed to Twilight, where the guy had the power and we had to watch out for his family. And it's teen love, and he's dreaming about a girl, and he meets this girl, and she tries to avoid him. And the main thing is that she is a young witch in training, I'll put it that way. When she reaches her 16th birthday, she either goes to the good side or the dark side. So you know that that birthday is going to be approaching. But there's quite a cast to this movie. There's Viola Davis, and we've got Thomas Mann, we've got Jeremy Irons, and we've got Emma Thompson in here. And so they kind of bring up the level of the film as such. The acting is very good. But the one that caught my eye was the lead. Her name is Alice Englert, E-N-G-L-E-R-T. And I didn't realize that she's director Jane Campion's daughter. Quite a nice young actress. So it leaves you thinking that, oh, gosh, I guess we'll probably have more without saying anything. But the way they get to the ending is a nice twist. I'm going to give it a 3, I think.
Now, there are dark forces surrounding this young lady. You could make a lot out of the fact that as she comes into maturity, that she's facing these choices. I suppose people who want to get into the feminist aspects of a film like this will be disappointed. But Emma Thompson, that's the one. That's the reason I think we can go to this movie, because it's so typical. She plays a huge, hidebound conservative, but yet you know right away, and it's not spilling anything, you know right away that she's also a really, really nasty witch. Now, the conservative character in reality is a nasty witch. Haven't we always suspected that somehow? I'll probably get letters on that one. To watch Emma Thompson deliver some hair-raising monologues in this film about the evils of the world, that is worth the price of admission. And Emma Thompson gives it her all in both sides of this character. But most compellingly, I suspect, in the darker sides that she's addressing. And she and Jeremy Irons, it's a pleasure to see these two veterans on the screen as well. I'm going to give it, I'll give it a 3.
You know what? I think I
pretty
saw
confusing, though.
Something completely different.
Well, here we go.
You know, I thought that these Southern accents that were employed by Emma Thompson and by Jeremy Irons sounded like they stepped out of a roadshow production of Annie Get Your Gun. I mean, they were just really broad and awful. And they seemed like they were in a different movie than the rest of the cast. I think the only person that remains unscathed was Viola Davis, because I think she really did a fine job, and she's a very credible actress. The young people were quite good, but I thought, these people are not in the same movie, and somehow someone has failed to mention that to them. So I think probably I'm only going to be able to give it a 2.
But what about Emma?
I think she was funny.
Wasn't she fun?
She was, I wouldn't say fun, but it just seemed like she was in the wrong movie.
I profess to be perpetually amazed at how people seize upon accents in a movie. Boy, in England, man, you get any kind of an accent wrong and people are all over it. I could not care less. For some reason, that didn't matter to me about either Emma or Jeremy. I thought they did a serviceable accent, but beyond that, it's what they represent, especially Emma.
So Russ, in other words, the movie did not have magic for you?
Oh, you know, this movie just seemed to be
pretty lame.
A blatant attempt to cash in on the Harry Potter and Twilight franchises. They just threw them into a blender with a little bit of Southern Gothic, and all of a sudden you've got beautiful creatures, and just it's a little more of the same.
Do we know these books, or at least the book?
Know.
Well, as I said before, this is the first book out in the series, and the second one, I think, is out of the stands maybe right now as we speak.
Without giving anything away, what would you say the message of this movie is?
Beware of arch conservatives.
Don't grow up in the South.
Okay, that's Beautiful Creatures, rated PG-13, and I think we can average it out to a 2.5. Are you all comfortable with that?
That's okay.
And I believe I may have misspoke earlier. The actual rating for Snitch, which we talked about earlier, is PG-13, which is a little bit surprising to me given the level of violence in that film.
Yes, yes.
Just be forewarned that it's probably not for young kids. I want to remind you that you're listening to Central Standard, and Central Standard Friday, we will talk about the movies, and we're going to be talking about the Academy Awards in a little bit. So I would like to know, what about Seth MacFarlane as host? Was he offensive? Was he funny? What did you think? What was your reaction to him, as well as the winners and losers at this year's 85th Annual Academy Awards? You can join the conversation at 816-235-2888. Or send us a note at centralstandard@kcur.org. And actually, there's one other movie we've all three seen, which I thought was quite good. It's a movie called Side Effects by filmmaker Steven Soderbergh.
And it's a pretty complicated film. Some convolutions in the plot, some of them surprisingly, which I always welcome. But what a hit on the psychiatric industry.
Right.
Because we've got two psychiatrists in here, both of whom are coming to bear upon a problem involving a young woman. And one of them, I won't say which, is bad news. But we, for a time, suspect that they're both bad news, I think. So therein lies some of the surprises. The pharmaceutical industry is also taking a hit, I think. It may be one of the few films I've ever seen that really does devolve primarily upon the side effects of what happens when you're taking drugs, some of them of which may not yet be approved. And the side effects here are such that this young woman is a pretty criminal character or not. Is she hiding some kind of an evil design that involves these two psychiatrists in her life or not? It's well done. Soderbergh likes to have films that have layers upon layers. There's considerable suspense. I found it very entertaining. Jude Law, as the other psychiatrist, You know, I can hardly say much about his character without giving too much away there either. This may be one of those films where you may have to just trust, if you're wondering, just trust that somebody says, you know, it's compelling, it's fun, and it's plot twists. I think you'll like it, but I can't tell you too much about it.
That's right.
That's a terrible fate for a critic in many ways, but there it is.
Marie?
Well, this is the type of script you'd look at and you'd think, I wonder if Alfred Hitchcock were alive today, if he would have made this film. And if he would have made it the way Steven Soderbergh did, which is not to say that that isn't a good film, but maybe he might have had some other twists in there. It's kind of a convoluted story that involves depression, illegal stock trading, a person's prison time, greed and ruthlessness, doctors getting drug companies to give them drug samples and then giving them to patients without adequately checking everything out. The title actually has a double meaning. Side effects could mean the side effects of a prescription drug, or it also could mean the side effects of one's actions in the collateral damage that happens to people around you. And there's three surprises in this. You look at the cast list. It's an enormous cast list, and certain names pop out at you, but something happens in there. There's a tragedy, and that was a surprise. And there's also a love affair somewhere in there that is a surprise. I like it when there are surprises and they're unusual as you go through the story. I thought Rooney Mara does an adequate job as playing the woman who's depressed, so to speak, and you start wondering if she is or if she isn't and whatever, you know, the two things going on here. But Jude Law as one of the doctors, and things start happening around him, and he starts to kind of sweat because things aren't going his way. I thought he did a good job in there, as he did in Anna Karenina as Karenina. I'm going to give it probably 3 stars, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with 3.
You know, I think I like this film a little bit better than both of you. This is a really intriguing and twisty movie. It's sort of like, you know, watching a great running back in football. You know, he goes one way, you think he's going to go another, and then he fakes you out and goes somewhere completely different. And that's what Steven Soderbergh and the screenwriter does to us. He really leaves us flat-footed, and you didn't really maybe see that coming. And when you can do that to me, and I have seen as many films as I've seen, you're doing a really good job. And also, it's very realistic. Steven Soderbergh has his own very individual style, and he makes it seem gritty and almost documentary-like in some respects. Well acted. And I did have an opportunity to chat with the psychiatrist who was the official consultant on this film. And I asked him, and I brought up that point. I said, this is not going to be used as a recruitment tool for the psychiatric institution anytime soon. And he said, I really think that people will understand that this is an anomaly, that this doesn't happen a lot. And so I think people will understand that. I'm not so sure. I think people see this and they're going to think, there's a lot of corruption that goes on in the psychiatric community, and I think that may be the takeaway that a lot of people will have.
And without being one myself, I'm wondering what would a psychiatrist do with a patient like Rooney Mara, because this is a character, let's say maybe that Steven Soderbergh is the psychiatrist and his patient is Rooney Mara. What is he doing with her? I'm not so sure he knows. She is such an enigma. Wrapped in a riddle, as they say. She does a lot with very little, but we're not quite sure what it is as we watch her throughout the film. And I kind of suspect that maybe Soderbergh himself, was he kind of making some of it up as he went along, as if he weren't sure what to make of this character either. And Rooney Mara, Noomi Rapace, what's going on with the names of young actors? I even thought for a while I was looking at Noomi Rapace.
She's the other girl with the dragon tattoo.
Yes, exactly. Right.
I think they both could have played this role equally well.
I think we'll average it out to a 3.5. Are we all happy with that for side effects?
Okay.
Rated R. And we've had Nick waiting patiently on the phone. Nick from Independence, who wants to chat a little bit about the Oscars. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you. Well, I watched the Oscars the day after. I watched them on Hulu, and I'd already heard the reviews of Seth MacFarlane's performance and how people really felt he was tasteless. And all of my friends, and I mean, I'm not sure if you can tell from my voice, but I'm a young man. All of my friends really enjoyed him. And I also thought it was very funny and really enjoyed myself, too. And taken in the light that the film that he wrote, produced, and directed was Ted in 2012, which is, from what I understand, the highest-rated R-rated comedy that's ever come out, I feel like he delivered the performance that you would ask from someone like him. And I feel like that the people that really would enjoy that aren't the people writing reviews, aren't the people that are probably invited. I mean, like, we're not the generation that really spends a lot of time caring about the Oscars. And I feel like the people that do write the reviews probably missed the point. And I feel like he's getting a really bad rap, and I think he did a really good job, and I feel really bad for him.
Do you think the reaction shots of the members of the audience expressing dismay, do you think those were staged?
I actually don't. I really feel like he offended people, but I feel like people in my generation enjoy that. I mean, he has three hit TV shows that all bank on offending people and making people feel uncomfortable. And I mean that's what he's known for. He's known for that, and he's known for very show tune style slapstick comedy. And I mean, I feel like that's he delivered exactly what you would hire him for.
They knew exactly what they were getting, didn't they? Mm-hmm. The Academy.
I feel like they did, but at the same time, like, I've watched the Oscars in years past, and I really feel like Billy Crystal and people like that give a salt and pepper mashed potatoes comedy, very inoffensive type of performance, and are kind of boring.
You know, about the accusations of misogyny or sexism? What did you think about that? Do you think he was guilty?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I do think he's guilty of that, especially the Rihanna comment that he made. But I also thought it was funny. I mean, that's just the way my generation is.
Did you happen to watch the Independent Spirit Awards that same weekend by any chance?
I'm afraid I didn't.
Yeah, that is, the Oscars were absolutely tame and PG rated as opposed to what you saw on the Independent Spirit Awards. I mean, that's really edgy.
I would actually like to watch that.
You might be able to find it on the Independent Film Channel.
I wish I could agree that it was offensive and tasteless. I thought he was just mediocre. Lame.
Well,
He wasn't too much of one direction or the other. Well, we managed to talk over
each. I mean, when William Shatner came out there and straight said, I wish Amy and Tina had done it, like, I thought that was the most tasteless thing that happened. I mean, how are you going to just insult the host on camera in front of his face unless that was scripted? But I thought that was the most tasteless thing that happened.
Hey, thanks a lot, Nick. Appreciate your feedback.
Thank you.
I don't think any generation has a lock on tastelessness.
That's true. You know, we've actually had a lot of feedback. Roberta stated on Facebook that I hated McFarlane's show and the ridiculous lowest common denominator forced comedy from presenters. The musical numbers were horrid mostly. And Lindsay had an alternate view. She said, quote, I thought he was funny, a little off color, yes, but his performance was well in line with his television shows. The backlash isn't unexpected nor the results of his hosting. I read that there was a 20% increase in viewers in the young demographic, and that is true, and the organizers got what they wanted. And Jeff wrote on Twitter, I actually really enjoyed Seth as the host, a little raunchier than usual, but I found him very entertaining. I think that is pretty much a typical reaction, I think. The younger the audience, the more they enjoyed it. I think the older audience found it offensive and misogynistic.
I felt a certain compassion for him because he was bombing. And at least according to that audience. Now, that audience was multiple generations, by the way.
Well, I had an opportunity to see the Swingle Singers concert that same
evening. Well, there you go.
I went to that instead of the Oscars. And after listening to you guys, I'm glad I went to the concert.
You know, I think that from my personal perspective, yes, he was raunchy, but also I thought he was pretty funny. I did laugh a lot, even though I was kind of ashamed of myself for doing so. And he's certainly better than what we saw with the pairing of Anne Hathaway and James Franco, which was a total train wreck.
That was Franco's fault. He was out of it.
I think the whole intention there was, once again, on the part of the Academy to try to relate to that younger demographic. And I think Franco and Hathaway did not do that, whereas I think McFarlane probably succeeded. Is that certainly true based on the ratings, which got a huge bump in that younger demographic?
I must be alone in my opinion that he was neither one nor the other.
Oh, you're not.
Just
you're
lame.
You're
mediocre.
Not alone at all, because I saw a lot of feedback on Facebook that a lot of people really hated what he did.
Well, I'm not I'm not saying I hated it. It was just mediocre. Do you hate mediocreness?
But you know
what?
You're
sad about it.
Here's what I think. This is the epitome of show business. This is the biggest event of the year in show business. It ought to be great. It ought to be very entertaining. And when it's not, you have to be a little bit disappointed.
I mean, if you really want tastelessness, go to the red carpet. That's what's happening.
There is a lot of that. That's true. We're going to be taking a short break, but we'll be back in just a little bit, and we've got some special announcements for you. We'll continue our conversation about what's going on with the Academy Awards, as well as covering the movies that have come out over the last month. You can join in on the conversation. Once again, give us a call, 816-235-2888. Welcome back to Central Standard Friday. I'm Russ Simmons, and it's Movie Critics Day here on Central Standard Friday. I'm joined by Marie Asner and John Tibbetts, and we're talking about the Oscars. What did you think? Was Seth MacFarlane funny, or was he offensive? Give us a call, 816-235-2888, or you can also write us at kcur.org. That's Central Standard at kcur.org. Yes, John?
Well, I do hope we can talk about something besides Seth MacFarlane,
too. We certainly will. You can talk about any of the movies that we're talking about as well.
Like hooray for shutting out the master.
I'm going to let you know about some things that are coming up announcement-wise here and that regard movies in the Kansas City area. First of all, the Tivoli Theater is presenting Rendezvous with French Cinema, the 18th annual showcase of contemporary French film. And there are 9 films specifically chosen from the 2013 program presented by the Film Society of Lincoln Center. And that's today, March 1st through March 10th at the Tivoli. It's a week-long program, and also it will feature French actress Audrey Tautou in one of 3 live post-screening Q&As that are being simulcast from Lincoln Center in New York City. Also, Screenland Crossroads is continuing its eclectic mix of offbeat classics and contemporary film. And March 1st through the 6th, they'll be presenting a horror, mystery, comedy, sci-fi, suspense, fantasy.
Well, that includes it all.
Which has one of the great titles, I think, of all time in terms of spoiler alerts. The title is John Dies at the End. And that's at the Screenland Crossroads.
Story of my life.
Kansas City Public Library continues its ongoing film series with Daniel Day-Lewis's first Oscar-winning performance in 1989's My Left Foot. And that screening is March 2nd at 1:30 p.m. at the Central Branch. And that same day, you'll have to choose, at 2 p.m. at the Plaza Branch, they'll be presenting Pedro Almodovar's 1995 film The Flower of My Secret. And last but not least, the 10th annual True False Film Festival continues through March 3rd in Columbia, Missouri, and it's really become the premier festival for documentaries in the country. And I've been there a few times. It is great. I couldn't recommend it more highly. They have Q&As with the filmmakers. They have often the subjects of the documentaries come and chat, and there are lots of very intriguing titles. And so you can find out information on all of these at kcur.org.
Do you have information about the first film in the French series or what the title is?
I you can find that out at kcur.org. You can link through to more information on all of those films in the French language series. Yep. Once again, you're listening to Central Standard Friday. Give us a call, 816-235-2888. We're talking about movies and the Oscars. And as a matter of fact, we do have a call right now from Kara in Lawrence. Welcome aboard, Kara.
Hi.
What did you think about Seth? Was he good?
I thought he was fantastic. I'm a big fan of Family Guy, and my husband and I really enjoy it. My father hates him. and I don't know if it's a generational difference in our, like, my generation's satire is very, very different from his generation's satire. And I think that's where the line is drawn as to who appreciated his hosting and who didn't.
What about your picks as far as the winners and losers? Do you think that is different, generationally speaking?
As far as, like, who actually won the awards?
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I think that varies every year. I think it depends on who gets the most ads in the trade papers and things like that. But I thought a lot of people really deserved it. I was a little disappointed in some of them, but I thought a lot of them were well awarded.
Kara, you know, you brought up something I think is very interesting, because I was at a party one time, an Oscar viewing party, and of course mm-hmm. we have the game where, you know, who gets to pick the most wins
the prize. Of course.
And the lady that won had not seen any of the films. And I asked her, how on earth did you get them all right? And she said, I judged it strictly based upon talk show appearances and magazine covers. And she was
totally
absolutely
true.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that a lot, that they all, like, take out, you know, public, like, ads in the trade publications and Variety and all that stuff. And
but I'll tell you,
for
Ang Lee getting Best Director, I don't remember any kind of promotion or hype for him.
I was surprised, and I thought that was great. And
absolutely.
I think he's a beautiful director. So that was, yeah, that was lovely.
That was a very deserving award.
But I did think it was interesting that Affleck wasn't nominated at all, considering he had won the award at so many other award shows. I thought that was interesting.
Yes, and that was almost a foregone conclusion that the Academy would make it up to him by making sure
mm-hmm.
that Argo won Best
Definitely.
Picture.
Definitely.
I was at the Critics' Choice Awards a few weeks before, where he did win Best Director, and he stood up to the mic and said, I'd like to thank the Academy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awkward.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Kara. Appreciate your call.
Sure, thanks.
If you want to join in on the conversation as well, you can call us at 816-235-2888. And you know what, John? Let's talk a little bit about an Oscar winner.
Yeah.
Another one that probably you can argue was very deserving. It's called Amour.
Yeah, an amazing film. As they say, it's not a film that you can expect to be a feel-good kind of picture, but I insist you feel good because it's a film that follows through on its premise. It delivers what it's apparently saying that it's going to deliver. It does not back off from the consequences and implications of this, which are that an elderly married couple are facing the imminent demise of one of them. And the one who will be dying soon is going to be afflicted with a lot of physical problems and debilities. And there's a line in it that I think will strike home to everyone, which is, imagination and reality have nothing in common. Now, we can all imagine what it's like to be growing old or to be around others who are growing old and then dying. But until you confront the reality, there's no way that you can really be prepared. They have nothing in common indeed. And so this film shares in that reality. And what I guess we can say who is who in this picture.
I think so.
Jean-Louis Trintignant is the husband, facing now the care and demise of his wife, Emanuela Riva. And you watch as gradually his care and affection begins to become stressed, as it inevitably will be. The picture, I think, actually is more about him than it is about her. It's a marvelous performance and a very brave performance by her. But for Jean-Louis Trintignant, for those of us who saw him in his Salad days, The Conformist and other pictures, wow. The contrast with what you see now on the screen, and yet the traces of elegance that are still there, the quietude with which he faces what he's facing, and then the abrupt shock of something that's going to happen, leaves you devastated. There is no higher rating for this picture. If we had a 6, I'd go for a 6. And the director, Michael Haneke, he does what he does so well sometimes, is that it's methodical, it's slow, it's measured, it's very quiet. The filmmaking technique is almost pedestrian, except it's always that camera is where it needs to be all the time. And there's some things at the end that Haneke's style are odd. So don't think that this movie is just some kind of a schematic design of a person dying. As you come out of the picture, you'll realize things have happened there that are very strange and somehow uplifting. So not a feel-good movie, but a feel-good about a movie.
I agree with 90% of what you're saying. I thought that was an outstanding movie, beautifully produced, beautifully acted, smart. It's extremely deliberately paced, and I think, you know, you had a reaction that you said it was uplifting. I think a lot of people will find it very depressing, and I've talked to a number of people that did have that reaction. So it's a movie I can't recommend to everyone. If you want to see beautiful filmmaking and acting, then this is the movie to see. If you want to feel good and be uplifted, this is not the movie to see.
And you know what else, though? I'm addressing this to Marie especially. There's a lot of Schubert piano music in here.
That's beautiful. Yeah,
there's
beautiful
some Beethoven music. Piano music, too. Both it's played on screen, and we hear it as part of the track. Mm. And anytime you can get Schubert piano music into a film, you've got it. You've
That's got a plus. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give it a 4, and you're going to give it a 5. So
right.
We'll say 4.5
right.
For Amour rated PG-13. And Emmanuel Riva was nominated for Best Actress. And speaking of Best Actress, Debbie from Kansas City, Kansas, says she was disappointed in the Best Actress Award. Welcome aboard, Debbie.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay, I'm trying to pull over, and I've got you on a Bluetooth, so I apologize. I was calling because you guys said exactly what I was calling about, which Amour... I was in love with that movie and kind of disappointed that I guess it didn't get as much of the accolade that I thought it deserved, especially in the Best Actress category. That's who I nailed to get that award. So.
She was excellent. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
But I do think John is right. I think the performance that really pushes and compels that movie is Jean-Louis Trintignant.
We went to go see. We were part of the AMC had the marathon where you could watch all of them. Overnight.
Oh, you lasted through it, huh?
you give me way too much credit. I stayed until 5:30 in the morning, and then I just completely hit a wall. I was just done.
Sometime when you have a few minutes, check out some of Jean-Louis Trintignant's films back in the late 60s, early 70s. Mm-hmm. Holy mackerel.
Okay. I will do that. I thought they were both amazing, and it was just an amazing film. So thank you for allowing me to put my two cents in.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks so much. And we have had other feedback as well. Clifford called in to say that at 75, he loved Seth MacFarlane. So much for that generation gap.
Yeah, really.
Allison writes on Facebook, I felt they neglected some very important people in the In Memoriam section. This was the first time in a long time that I'd actually seen some of the winning movies. I love Daniel Day-Lewis's acceptance speech.
Yeah.
I still laugh when I think of it. I thought, he gave the best speech of the year.
Well, I saw him give a Golden Globe speech, too. This guy is all class.
Yes.
Compared to everybody around him, boy, does he stand out.
Yeah, I saw him also at the Critics' Choice Awards, and everyone is thoughtful. I would say if I were going to give a coaching tip to people in giving an Oscar acceptance speech, watch what Daniel Day-Lewis does.
Yes. Yeah.
And also, please think about it in advance.
I know. Ben Affleck was a complete idiot in his presentation. And Daniel Day-Lewis, even the byplay with Meryl Streep, was very elegant.
We have Michael from Midtown who says, talks about a long talker. If the Academy would stop trying to pay back others, it might be more to the point. Welcome aboard, Michael.
Thank you. I was just saying, if they would get it right the first time, there would be no need to give up, make up Oscars the following year or whatever. I was using the example of 1939, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington with James Stewart. I feel he should have won that year. Instead, they gave it to Robert Donat, Mr. Chips, Goodbye, Mr. Chips. They hardly ever play that movie, but they play Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, plus James Stewart carried that movie. Okay. The very next year,
yeah,
1940, everybody, at least I feel, Henry Fonda should have won for The Grapes of Wrath. What did they do? A payback Oscar to James Stewart for The Philadelphia Story because they snubbed him in 1939. If they would just get it right, if they just get it right in the first place, there would be no need of makeup. I feel like Henry Fonda got snubbed.
I think you're right.
You know,
this happens a lot. You'll see that throughout the history
of
the Oscars.
It sure does.
It is not a perfect world.
It's not. But, I mean, at least it gives us something to shoot for and work at. Like, let's try to get it right the first time.
Hey.
Instead of, popularity. Instead of going on popularity, go on the performance. Say, I'm a vote for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that. Instead of saying, well, I like this person better. Or he didn't win last year. I'm going to give it to him this year.
Yeah.
That's what it was about with Ben Affleck. I didn't see his movie. But I felt like because he was enough for the director, they gave him for Best Picture.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what I'm saying?
But for a lot of people, it's the politics of the Oscar that really are significant.
Yeah.
I'm not saying good or bad. It's what makes the Oscars interesting.
And
the very thing that you're complaining about.
Right. And you know what's so funny is that when they originally decided to have the Oscars, it was really based on talent.
Yeah.
Or based on, but you know, like you said, people get behind the scenes in politics. Hey, if you vote for my guy, I'll do this for you. And then it gets a little corrupted.
You're right.
You know.
Thank you so much, Michael. Appreciate
okay,
your call. And we want to remind everybody that we're talking about the movies and the Oscars. So give us a call at 816-235-2888. You're listening to Central Standard Friday here on KCUR. And Mary from Leawood wants to talk about Helen Hunt. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I think a movie that was certainly underrated was the movie Sessions, mm-hmm. which has a premise that not many people would like to see about or hear about, but I think it was so wonderfully done, so tactful, so tender, and I think Helen Hunt, who was mentioned early on as the supporting actress and then got nowhere, I think she did a spectacular job.
And John Hawkes.
Mm-hmm. And John Hawkes, yes, and I'm looking for the book of poetry that he wrote, and who knows where it is. I got it for Christmas. But they're a series of short poems, and it's a small book, and it was published by some obscure publisher in San Francisco, I think. But the poems are not, absolutely at the top of the list, but they're all well done. And I just think that the two of them made that movie really spectacular and brought up a subject that is certainly never mentioned anywhere.
You're right. That's definitely a performer's movie. Thanks for your thoughts, Mary. Appreciate your call.
You're welcome.
Also, we want to bring in Jesse into the conversation. Jesse from Leavenworth wants to say something about Steven Spielberg. What's your thought, Jesse?
Well, it seems to me that there's, at least in my opinion, a perceived prejudice against Spielberg. I thought Lincoln was the best movie I've ever seen. Now, I'm 74 years old, so I've seen a few movies. And it seems to me that the only thing that came out was Daniel Day-Lewis winning, which he certainly deserved. But there were the movies. It was all inspiring movie. And it seems to me that this is not the first time that Spielberg should have won, and he didn't. And so I was going to ask your opinion on it.
Yeah, well, I thought it was outstanding as well. Unfortunately, the screening I went to, I was walking outside out of the theater with my wife and told her how much I enjoyed it, and she said, I thought it was really boring.
Oh.
And she's a smart woman.
That's okay.
So it's not for everyone's taste.
See, I would have put my money on Lincoln as best film and Spielberg as best director and Daniel Day-Lewis as best actor and Sally Field as best supporting actress, and I didn't make it through
that. And
maybe
the script, too.
Well, we both. Yeah. Both lost then, because that's what I would have picked also.
You know, Steven Spielberg has won in the past. As a matter of fact, he's been nominated 5 times, so he's not exactly someone who's not been getting the
not an amateur, yes.
Right.
But how many times has he won, do you know?
Well, I believe he's won twice.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you know, winning shouldn't be a deterrent from winning again. I mean, if you're good, you're good. Well, anyway, I don't want to take any more of your time, and I appreciate you.
No problem. Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
You too. Let's jump back into talking about some of the films that have opened since we last chatted, and one of them is a raunchy comedy, R-rated, called Identity Thief. Marie?
The main thing that you can learn from this movie is in the first couple of minutes when Jason Bateman is taking a call and somebody says, you've been the victim of identity theft, and give us your name and important serial numbers and so on like that, and we'll double-check. And what he's doing is talking to the thief, and that is Melissa McCarthy, and away we go from there. So when he finds out that he's been scammed, the police say, well, this is just another one of, you know, a million cases we have on this. But he knows from one of the charge accounts that she's in Florida, and so he starts following her. And then we have this buddy action between them. Jason Bateman is a great second banana. I mean, he's got this look on his face where he gets kind of pathetic. And even if you kind of strip his clothes off by the side of the road, which is in one of the scenes, he just kind of goes along with it. But Melissa McCarthy is a good physical comic. And her modus operandi here to get out of anything is to be violent. So she hits a guy right in the throat. But we learn to look at her background, and we find out that she had a bad childhood and so on, and it keeps on going like that. I thought that it was a little bit too violent and raunchy, even for a PG-13 rating, and I would give it probably 2.
I think I would give it a little bit more, only we're not that far apart on this. I think it probably deserves a 3, but this is a movie that obviously was very dependent on its leading actors, and they do a lot of ad-libbing, and it's quite apparent. Melissa McCarthy has a very unique style, and you can tell when she's adding to the screenplay herself. As a matter of fact, so much that I think she probably deserves some screenwriting credit for all of the improv that they did during this movie. But thankfully, most of it's pretty funny. Mm-hmm. So it's a mildly entertaining waste of time, but Identity Thief is rated R for that raunchy factor. So we'll average it out to a 2.5 between the two of us for Identity Thief. And let's also quickly talk about another film that opened back on February 14th. And this is the latest film from adapted from a Nicholas Sparks movie. It's called Safe Haven. Marie?
This film is very close to a 1993 film called Sleeping with the Enemy with Patrick Bergen, Julia Roberts, and Kevin Anderson, in which there is a woman who is escaping from a destructive marriage, and she changes her identity, fakes her death, takes off someplace, and the husband is affiliated with law in some aspect and doesn't really believe she's dead and starts to trail her. And in Sleeping with the Enemy, I mean, that's the basic story. And here we have Safe Haven. It's Nicholas Sparks. A little bit more romance in Nicholas Sparks' film. And also there's a fourth character in here besides the woman who's running away, the man that she meets that you know she's going to fall in love with, and he has children who are adorable. They're put in peril, which is something to watch out for. It's not exactly a family film as such, a romance. But also his late wife is... Everyone talks about her, and she has a presence there that's, you know, that's very nicely done. Beautifully photographed. It's South Carolina again, so I don't know that Sparks knows of any other place in the world to film, but right in that area. So if you're looking for a romance but with some violence in it, too, I might add, this may be for you, and I'm going to give it 2.5.
Well, I think you may be a little generous there. this is the, as you said, the latest from Nicholas Sparks, and I think Nicholas Sparks fans will probably enjoy it. However, there is a revelation that comes late in the film that is literally jaw-dropping. So this is a movie where it's going to affect your eyes. You're either going to be dabbing them or you're going to be rolling them. And I was an eye roller because when I saw this thing, you got to be kidding me. No one is going to buy this plot twist. And so from that respect, it really went off the rails for me. I do like the actors. I thought that Julianne Hough and Josh Duhamel, very likable. They make a good pair, but it's a very mild film. Surprisingly, coming from a very talented director, Lasse Hallström, who's done some wonderful films in the past, but this is just bland. So I'm only going to be able to give it a 2. You're going to give it a 3, Marie?
No, I said a 2.5.
2.5. Let's just call it 2.5 for Safe Haven, which is rated PG-13. I did want to talk quickly about another film that opened back on February 22nd, which a lot of people had asked me about. It's based on a novel called Bless Me Ultima, which is a very popular novel, a controversial one, in fact, particularly popular with Hispanics because of the subject matter. And it's about a young boy, and it takes place during World War II. And he is 7 years old, and a woman comes to live with his family in rural New Mexico, who is a curandera, if I'm pronouncing that right, a healer. Or is she a force for good or a force for evil? And the movie brings up a lot of interesting moral conundrums, and it really is thoughtful in that respect. It's directed and adapted from the novel by Carl Franklin, who is a very talented director. But you know what? Sometimes what's poetic on the page just comes off on the screen as dull. And unfortunately, in this case, that's sort of what happens. It just kind of sits there. I wanted to be emotionally involved with this film, and I wasn't. Miriam Colon plays Ultima, who's a wonderful actress. I thought she did a fine job, and it's beautifully photographed. But unfortunately, it has a really slow pace, and it's just a movie that was uninspired. So unfortunately, I'm only going to be able to get Bless Me Ultima a 2.5. But something that's not slow-paced, but maybe not any better, A Good Day to Die Hard, rated R. Marie?
Oh, you give me a good action chase movie anytime. A lot of people are panning the latest Bruce Willis one in this series where he plays John McClane, the New York cop. Here he goes to Russia, and he's got a son there, and the young actor's name is pronounced Jai Courtney. I was not familiar with him. John is a New York cop, so, you know, we duke him out, and we're going to get to the point right away where the other kid is in CIA, and, you know, they do things a little underhandedly and so on. They mix in Chernobyl. They mix in spies. They've got somebody who looks like a spy and isn't, somebody who is a spy and maybe not be. But there's a chase scene in there that involves a van, a truck, a car, and a cement truck. And you wouldn't believe this. I mean, it's worth the price of admission to go ahead and see this, plus a helicopter chase scene. And this helicopter looks like something, if you remember the Roy Scheider Blue Thunder movie of about 20 years ago, and they had this helicopter, and they said, in 20 years, this will probably be the one that's really going to be out there. This is a prototype. Here it is again. Boy, this thing takes up the sky. So if you like action, this is for you, and I'm 2.5.
I probably agree with you. This movie has gotten slammed a lot. It is bad. There's no question about it. But it doesn't necessarily deserve, the vehement reaction that it's gotten from some circles. So I will give it a 2.5 as well. So that's 2.5 for A Good Day to Die Hard. Thanks to my fellow movie critics, Marie Asner of the Metro Voice and John Tibbetts, Associate Professor of Theater and Film at the University of Kansas. On Monday, Central Standard will return with a look at the play Eat This. Up to Date is next with a look at the local music scene. Our show today was produced by Matthew Long Middleton. Our announcer is Kim Noble. I'm Russ Simmons, and this is Central Standard Friday. Enjoy your weekend.